I'm Heinz Wagoner. This is the 95th Polo Men's Breakfast, and we started in September of 99. It's intended to do exactly what we've done here this morning, to get to know each other and just have a casual gathering where we can talk and then have a speaker. And we do have, I sometimes have CDs of past speakers. If you have a CD player, I'm not getting a new car because you can't get a CD player in there. So, but we also have it on the website. If you go to polomensbreakfast.com, there's a link of past speakers, and you can listen to the audios of any speaker for many years. Feel free to check on that. And how many of you found out about the, most of you found out about this by the email, right? Anybody by the sign? The sign did? Was helpful? Anyway, I like to put out those signs. And then the purpose is to connect with each other like we've been doing and to build community. It's intended for anybody in the world. So if you know somebody from Poland or something that would like to come, just invite them, and you'll have to pay for their airfare, so that may be a little expensive, but anyway, but it was intended to mainly be to be a way to connect with people in the polo fields and Vickery and this immediate area, and that's still kind of the main goal. And so if you want to bring something for the information table, if you got a civic group or something that you'd like to let people know about, just bring it and put it on the information table. We're politically neutral here, and I stress that very much because sometimes, and I do that in the weekly luncheon that I co-host, because sometimes, unfortunately, that causes division and tension. Have you anybody recognized that?
Just
me. And it shouldn't, but it does anyway. It's just the way it is. As I always mention, you can leave early. We had Dr. Lee, Richard Lee, the pastor at First Redeemer, speak here, and he said he's had people leave early when he talks, but they've never been invited to leave early before the talk starts. So he lived in the polo fields for a number of years. I think we also had Mark Spain speak here, the realtor guy. You don't know who Mark is, right? I'm kidding. His billboard. He and but sometimes we have an around the room. I already asked you where you lived when you were 10 years old, but I'm going to go ahead and introduce our speaker, so he has plenty of time to tell us about his life story and all the interesting things he's done. Our speaker is Hans von
Czierski,
executive chef. Hans was born near Berlin, Germany, in 1936 and moved to Hamburg after the war. And I was born near Hamburg. I was born in Yesterburg, a little town. You know where Yesterburg is? Awesome. after the war, and moved to Hamburg after the war, where he did his apprenticeship as a chef in a Four Seasons hotel. Now, you didn't start at McDonald's, right?
No.
Okay. Darn,
no,
okay.
Hamburgers.
Yeah, no hamburgers. Okay. And was a chef in a four-star hotel in Munich. After this, he was a chef for five hotels in Switzerland, England, Africa, and came to the U.S. in 1962, where he was an executive chef at the World's Fair in Seattle. And then worked at the Hyatt in Los Angeles before opening up the Hyatt Regency in Atlanta. So those of you who have enjoyed that, Hans was involved in the start of that, and you were the chef there for a while, right?
Yes.
Well, you'll tell us all about that in a minute.
Yes.
So it's great for Hans to share here, and so come on, if you want to come up here.
As Hans said, my name is Hans von Czierski, born 1936 in by Berlin. It makes me old, very old.
No.
But I'm still alive, well and kicking, and let's start from the beginning. Yeah, in the war, when I grew up, we didn't know anything about it. I was on the countryside. My father had a 10,000-acre estate, and he was studying. He was a lawyer. He studied the law, constitutional law, and he had a degree in agriculture. Then he had to run an estate. So that is what you do in Germany at that time. You study, then you go out in the colonies, or you work for somewhere else for 10 years to get experience. And then you come back home and you work for your father as a foreman. Your father at that time, maybe 70, 75, in that range, he keeps the rein of it, but he lets you do what you have learned from others, but he watches you. And say he might give you the checkbook, and $5,000 you can write your own checks, but everything above, my signature is on, to make sure he doesn't play it away. So with that grown up, we had no worries in the war, but after the war, it was rough. 46, 45, 46, 47, there was no school. Emi had the first year and a half schooling, but after that, for 2.5 years, no school. When I was then 9, they put me in a 4th grade, like the normal grade you would be, and I lost a lot of schooling. And I noticed that one, basically the next 50 years, that there was something missing in my education. But I overcome, and all the modern stuff, what you learn, then geography, history, I was good, but never in German grammar. Forget it. Was difficult anyway, so. But then after the war, we moved to Hamburg. Then we learned from the refugees was coming from the east, the Russian, what they did is they shot all educated people or people with influence. The peasants, they do as told. That's the way it is. But the educated one can think, and the Russian doesn't want to. So they shot everybody. So my father was a volunteer in the war. He was indispensable. Later, he had to run an estate for the food supply. But my father was a mayor from his own community or small village, you would say here. So he signed his own papers that he was expendable. Mm-hmm. So he volunteered. He was a lieutenant, like you say here, in the National Guard. And like many Germans, did not know the evil what Hitler turns to be out to be in the Nazis. They just had no ideas. Doesn't matter what they say today, I would say 85% of the people didn't know. We found out afterwards, the hard way. And that was in 45 when the war collapsed, and we had it rough. And just survival on a day-to-day basis, I must say, with food was the most priority when you're young. You don't care what's on around you. You want to eat. And I must say, my mother could provide a plate to eat, but we never had enough. But we never went hungry to bed. But as I say, we never had enough to eat. So with this growing up and the schools, I finished the school, high school, and my mother said, what do you want to learn? Then it is custom in Europe that you learn an apprentice, doesn't matter, cooking, waitering, you learn wine and everything else, and plumbing. In bricklayers, make an apprenticeship, then you have to learn about bricks, cement, mixing, foundation, is everything. 5 days a week you work, and 1 day a week you go to college, paid by the government. So you do your 3 years apprenticeship and 3 years college. And it's massive, and you get a lot of information. like for me, was not just cooking, food, labor cost, writing menus, what you, proteins, etc., etc. You learn a lot. And it sticks with you. Then the German government says, we want to educate you that you have a profession and you are not later unemployed. That way, you can support yourself. We don't have to support yourself. It's not like here, as I say, from a crib to the grave, we take care of you, you just have to vote for me. No, no, that is not, it's do it yourself, you know, and that's, you have a very good, but I come to that later. So I learned, my mother said, you always had a good taste, but you could figure out what's in it. Why you don't learn to be a chef? Mm. And she had a cousin who was in a tank with the son of the owner of the 4-5-star hotel in Hamburg, the Four Seasons. And my mother was a master of manipulation to use people. Like you say here, you have to know somebody to get something, yeah. You know, and she did it. And so I was privileged to learn in a 5-star hotel, my apprenticeship, and you learn a lot. But in a college, even from a small restaurant, say Olive Garden or so, you learn more hands-on as in a big hotel. There was always somebody to watch you. You were insecure, you know it, but you cannot do it. And after the 3 years, your examination goes for 3 weeks. So first week you go into school, you got on a paperwork. If you pass that one, the following week, there are 5 master chefs sitting there. They ask you question accordingly where you were. And Ima was in a 5-star. They try to slip you something in. Mm-hmm. He asked me, how long you bake a potato? Stupid thing, I thought. But the proper answer was, it's according to the size of the potato and the heat of the oven, approximately an hour, 15 minutes. That was the right answer, not just say an hour, you know. Then, no, a small potato might take only 45 minutes. So, no, the old chefs, they were, mostly were mean, you know. And then they grow up in the early 10s and 20s, so they went through the hard school knocks, you say, you know, so. And they let us know it, that they know it. And what you do is, after you've done your apprenticeship, the next 3-4 years, every 6 months, you change your job. That you work with different executive chefs together, that you learn their tricks and their trade. What's good for you, it might be not good for me or handy. And that is what you're supposed to learn. And it's not against you that you cannot hold a job. No, it is to learn. Then you learn for life. And you are young, 18 and 22. So you're just starting your life. And that's what I did from Hamburg. I went 1 year to Munich. And then I found a job in Zurich, Switzerland. And I enjoyed that one. And I had a motor scooter, mountain up, mountain down. It's a Vespa, you know, the little.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I really enjoyed it. But then, in Switzerland, I learned French and Italian. Then all the domestic workers in Switzerland were coming from Italy. You know, there it's just the way it is. But then I say, what I want to do. And I decided to go to England. I found a job in a small hotel, but very exclusive. right in the center of London. And it was a Swiss owner. That's how I got to it. And I worked there for 7 months. He had a hotel too in Bournemouth that was about 100 miles southwest from London, right on a channel. And the Londoner go on a weekend to Brighton. That's just 45 miles. That's just an hour on a autostrada. So, but I went to Bournemouth, where the rich guys go in their Rolls Royce and Bentleys, or the big Jaguars they had. So, no, I enjoyed that one. We worked from 8 to 2, and then we had a 3-hour break, and then from 5 to 7. That's how in a resort there were dinner. There is a 3 hours, and that basically was from 6. We had 1 hour time to prep it. And I enjoyed it, but then I went back to London afterwards, and I say where to go, and through a friend, there was a waiter. He said he goes to the Grosvenor House. That's on Park Lane. It's one of the major hotels, right on Hyde Park. And I worked there. There was 1,000-room hotels, and we had banquets up to 2,000 people. So you learn to cook for massive people. And I enjoyed that one. And then I say, what to do next? I saw a small article, and I always watch what signed it. And I saw a hotel advertised, Windhoek. This was the German former Southwest Africa, and west side of Africa, you said Congo, Angola, Namibia, as I called it, but they used to call Southwest Africa, Cape Town. And they're looking for a chef who can work there, but willing to go 3-4 times a year on a 2-4 week safari. Wow. No less, but no more. And I said, this is just what I was looking for. And I applied, and I was accepted, so I flew to Windhoek, and I enjoyed that one. It's a big outdoor. Namibia is like Texas, bush country, a lot of wildlife, springboks, zebras, and I learned very quick. We worked 2 weeks, and then we had 4 days off, and this you go out hunting. I was shooting springboks, eelers, and one cup buffalo, but I had to borrow a gun from that farmer. It was a 425 Winchester. He said, put it good on your shoulder, then it has a kick. It kicked like a mule. I was sitting way back in the bushes, and my shoulder heard it for 2 weeks afterwards. There was the elephant guns, you know, but you have to use it for those Cape buffaloes. It's like a bison. It's the same family. And I didn't know what to do with them. The lions took care of the hyenas. So, but the springboks I took home, I skinned them, and the hotel manager paid us 10 cents for the meat, and if I shot 4 of them, it pays for my whole trip, where you get invited by the farmers, or the big ranchers, they call it. You take a case of beers with, and they let you shoot, you know, and pays for my ammunition. I always was dollar and cents. I always was keen on that one, make sure I break even. And I done it for nearly 2 years, but then I say it was time to go back to civilization. You know, I don't want to go down drain. So I went back to Hamburg. I took a boat from Walfish Bay on the African coast, took 3 weeks. They have those freighters and passengers. There are 15 passengers on then you don't need a doctor. If you're 16, you have to have a doctor. It's just a maritime law. So I enjoyed it. The 3 weeks, go the whole coast up Madeira, and then Madeira, Las Palmas, the Canary Islands to Lisbon. And there they asked me if I was willing to give my cabin away when we come to Rotterdam. So they got from the officers' wives can come in, they can join them from Rotterdam to Hamburg, cooks another week with loading, unloading, etc., etc. And I said, yeah, sure. They paid me a first class ticket with the TEA. There's a front runner from the bullet trains they have now. And so I went to Hamburg, was just before my 23rd or 24th birthday, birthday. And then with Christmas at home, where I met a family who lived in the same neighborhood like we did, and they immigrated to Canada. The girl was a friend of my sister, and they lived in Canada for 10, 12 years, and then they moved to Seattle, and she was married to a young British chef, and he told me that they desperately need chefs in Seattle for the World's Fair. Oh, wow. And I wrote them, and in Europe you have a nice system. Wherever you work, you get a reference when you leave. They mail it to you with your new address. They make sure you didn't left any skeleton in your closet. And it's usually three paragraphs, your written reference. The first day, Mr. Hans von Tschirschke worked from this and this day are such and such in our establishment. Hans was a pleasant young fellow at that time, and he cooperated with us, and we could put him, he was associate, he was working in a possum or intermediate soups and sauce stations, and or garde manger, wherever we need him, he was willing to help us out. So that's what you work for. And in the third paragraph, Hans leaving on his own accord to better his self with education, get more experience. And with you put it on your resume where you work, but the last three jobs you make a copy on a Xerox and you send it within. So that get a pretty good. So I got a job in Seattle at Olympic Hotel. It used to be run by Western International, and they had on the West Coast, Portland, Oregon, San Francisco, and LA, the big hotels, and I worked there for nearly 2 years. I enjoyed Seattle very much. Had a nice spring, nice summer, then a fall, and in the winter skiing. Every Sunday we went in the Cascade Mountains for skiing. About 5-6 we meet at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning by the ski lift up and down the mountains. We enjoyed it. Over the fairs, I met a young German chef who worked there, but then he moved to Hyatt. Hyatt was a small company. They had Seattle, Tacoma, Burlingame, San Jose, Palo Alto, just motels, not hotels. But they bought a Hyatt Regency. It was done by a Phoenix investment company. And those five guys who even put $1 million up to build it got cold feet. They want to sell it. Nobody wants to buy Atlanta, going with the wind, way down south. No. But after 1 year, Pritzker from Hyatt got smart. He looked it up. And he said they were already the top 450 corporation in Atlanta from the top 500. So he bought it in 5 minutes for $5 million, put another $5 million in, put the Polaris and other things in, and we opened it up. This Hyatt made what Hyatt came today. Well, we had 96% occupancy the first 10 years. They make money high over heels. And like I say, they built a big corporation, what's today. And this had nothing to do with the Pritzker, who was a governor from Illinois. This was brother. He was smarter.
It came out of that.
So this is how I came to Atlanta with that chef. What Hyatt did is they took a whole management group. Then when you open up a big hotel, from usually you take people from there, from there, from there, and put them up. You don't know them, and you fight for position. That's just the way it is. You know, in any corporation you go in, you have to establish your territory. But we were happy. We worked together for 4 years, so we know each other. So we were not fighting. We worked together. That's why it was such a big success from the day they opened it. After 2 years, they want to transfer me to Knoxville, Tennessee, but no, I got married. So I just, a little footnote, I was working 3 years there, and when my mother got on my case and say, why you don't come back on a vacation? Then I told her I liked it. In LA, I loved it. On a Saturday, in the wintertime, we went skiing, the Big Bear, the San Bernardino Mountains, we had snow. On Sunday, you go on the beach in Santa Monica, go swimming. Where can you do that one? There's only one place, it's LA. Yeah, you drive maybe 200 miles a day, and I enjoyed it. And what they had, the Hollywood Bowl, and they built it near the Symphony Hall. So LA was nice for me. I enjoyed it. But when this, so after 3 years, I went on vacation. I told my mother, why don't you meet me with your Volkswagen in Frankfurt? I invite you for a trip to Southern Europe. The dollar was strong, 1 to 4 marks and a quarter. This whole 4 week trip cost me less than $1,000. Wow. You know, in Italy, we had a big room like that one with a private bath, $3 a night. Wow. Can you, and breakfast included. I mean, that was 66. Way past our time now. And so we make the trip. We went through from Frankfurt, through the Black Forest, through Switzerland, and then Milano, Florence, Rome, Monte Cassino. I want to see that one. Then Naples. And we went over to Brindisi on the Adriatic Sea. We took a ferry to Greece. And went on a canal from Corinth to Athens, then Olympia, Thessaloniki, Olympia where they light the torch. That was the first Olympic game. And then over Yugoslavia, back Austria to Germany. And on the last day, and I was in Hamburg about 3 days, and I visit the confirmation pastor. We were living on one side of a town in north, but then we moved to Fulspital. This was the south. And our confirmation pastor, too, was then south. But my mother was a physical therapist after the war, and my wife's mother was a patient of her. She said the name Kastner, and that's how I visit him. That's where I met my wife. I took her out for dinner. After that, we talked for 4 hours, and the next day I had to leave my plane. I had to go back to Frankfurt. So, but we start riding, and then in October, when come here, I supposed to be January 5th there, but I took October off, drove all the way from L.A., took the Grand Canyon and the Southern Route, New Orleans, to Atlanta, left my car there with the chef. You put it in the garage, all my stuff was in. Just lock it up, and I stayed 10 weeks home. And the first night I come back, I asked my wife, would you have to marry me? She said, yes. I know her for 4 hours, so.
Wow.
But we were 55 years together.
Wonderful.
She made her master's degree in nursing in the university in Düsseldorf. So she said, I would like to finish it. I said, yeah. Then I have to open up a hotel. So, and that's when I came to Atlanta. From January the 5th, we had a lot of work to do. And then we opened up a hotel. I was the number two chef there. And we worked 12, 15 hours a day. That's just the way it is. And I told him I don't mind the hours. But in July the 15th, I go on a four-week vacation. Then I want to get married. And that's what we did. So I came home. She filled out all the papers and what you have to do with it. The only things what was missing was a marriage license. I came on a Saturday morning in Hamburg, then on Monday morning, the first thing is we went to the Justice of the Peace. We got a marriage license. That's what you have to do in Germany. You have to get married by the government. You fill out a paper, and then the pastor can marry you. Mm-hmm. And we brought in that paper to the consulate, then at noon, but a 9 o'clock appointment with the Justice of the Peace from the local administration, like here would be in coming, you know, the government's building. And we brought it to the consulate, and I said, you can pick up then the weeks of following Monday. So I say, okay, fine. So, and that Saturday we got then married. Honeymoon was short, was only 4 days, but then we had to go back and Wednesday picked up the visa, and then on Friday we flew to Atlanta and I start my work again. And I looked for a job for my wife. I was in Piedmont. We lived on 28th Street. I had an apartment there. And I told him, my wife has a master's degree in nursing, but they told me she has to make a state port here. And she was just finishing. So, but she could work as a RN right away then with that one. The head nurse, she said, I work with a lot of German, Swedish, and Swiss nurses. I know their education and their background, and they was always good with that. So that was, for me, good. So she had a job. After 3 weeks, I told her, we got her. We always walked after work a little bit together. I said, tomorrow you start to work. She said, what? So, so she started to work there 1 year. And I told her to, that's a little private, but I said, we want to wait before we have a child. Let's be married 1 year. And we don't tell nobody. If you get pregnant before, we tell nobody anything. After the first anniversary, we let him know. My wife said, I agree full-heartedly. And we did. And 22nd of July, we wrote, her parents said we were pregnant, and so, and our first child would be born in September. So, with that one, we move on, and we were happy to have it, and was good, was born in Piedmont Hospital, our daughter, Bart's wife, and when she was pregnant again, was not planned, but our second daughter was coming. We bought a house and Nancy Creek, just inside the 285 today. When we bought a house in 69, there were no 285, no perimeter more, nothing.
Yeah.
And my wife went with the children to the farm where the lambs in the springtime and the calves were so, they were happy. So, yeah, it was a different time. And I might say, in 69, we were the second house in the neighborhood. There was 160 acres. I don't know how many houses, but around 200 homes. We were the second house to put air conditioning. For us, air conditioning was German blood, was not a luxury, it was a necessity. You know, so that you can sleep at night. I know from Africa, where we had at night 90 degrees, but it was cotton picking dry, it was not the humidity we have here. In Africa, we had 110 degrees. It doesn't bother me a bit, but I was at that time 40 years younger too, so. Yeah. But, so we put the air conditioning in, and it was the right things to do, so. We go up there, and then I quit hired. Then, like I said, they want to transfer me to Knoxville, but I just didn't feel like no. And I worked in different hotels and a Commerce Club too. And then I opened up my own restaurant. Like every chef wants to open up their own restaurant. But I learned too, a lot of chefs are not restaurateurs. As a chef, you say to the manager, I want this one, I need this one, and I have to provide it. But as a restaurant owner, you say, what can you afford? What is feasible? And now, how to finance it? You know, you have to be not as an owner, not just to be a good cook, but you have to manage, and you have to be a businessman. Mm-hmm. It's just, if you miss on one part of it, you fall down. And I think I was okay. Then I nearly had it 10 years, the restaurant. But then Roswell, where I had a restaurant open up, was like Dunwoody 10, 15 years earlier, was a culinary wilderness. They were just not there. The people were not there to support it. I was the first white tablecloth restaurant open up. But then after 10 years or 8 years we heard it, there came about a dozen restaurants in. So I sold it. I went to Big Canoe. I know I had a lot of customers that came from Big Canoe, go to doctor's appointments, you know, then Big Canoe doesn't have any doctors. And they hired me as their food and beverage manager. I run a country club.
At Big Canoe?
Yes.
Awesome. And what were the restaurants that you had called?
Four Seasons. Like the same. Like
so that was called the Four Seasons?
Yes, yes. Wow. I done some title research, or my lawyer did. There was no stopping on that I could do it. So they had a Four Seasons up in New York, but had nothing to do with Atlanta, so I was able to use that name.
Wow.
And you know, I had a good hotel, restaurant, and it worked out for me. But then I said, with this 10 restaurant coming in, get out before you get hurt. Then everybody goes to a new restaurant, and you lose a customer. And then they come back and say, it's not as good as yours. But you hurt in the meantime. So that is why I sold it and went to Big Canoe. But after 3 years there, I run a club for them. But then they come to me and say, why you don't lease it? And they gave me a 3-page lease, just sign it. I say, let me take it home and read it at least. And I couldn't make head or tail, you know. Right. The fine print. So I took a yellow pad and I say, make 10 points on. First thing is the rent. I say, I pay you 3% of gross. Usually it's 5% or 6%. But if you put 3%, you can negotiate. You know, that time was 8 or 10%, you can make a compromise. But if you say 5%, you wind up by 8%. So I started by 3, so I could come to 5. I know the games.
Yes.
So I negotiate. I want to stay with the insurance program, health insurance. And the golf clubs was in the same building, paid so much for the electricity, or tampon, and they agreed to all of them. They just was and I said, if I do it, they lost about usually $150,000 to $180,000 a year. There was interest in selling land and not the country club. So they told me, they pay me 10% if I reduce it. And like I said, in the first year, I brought it down from 161 to 59,000. They paid me $10,000. Yeah, I thought it was taxes. No, they paid it just cash and no taxes. Wow. I took it. I told to Maria, now we buy nice furniture. Then our furniture was getting old. The first we bought, and then we bought some good stuff. Thank you for the canoe. But after 3 years, I say, you know, driving was 53 miles from my house to the canoe. It started getting old. Then the Nico Hotel came up, and they was looking for a hotel butcher where it can work independent. And I had to take a big step backwards, but I want to do it. I always cut my own meat. And a hotel butcher, he was a Swiss executive chef. I tell him, you don't find in Atlanta. I talked with him. You can get him in New York, Chicago, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, up in the northern state, where they have it for the past 100 years, European influence, but not here in the south. But I say, I'm willing to do it. I take a step backwards. So I don't have any more the pressure than I was 60 by that time. And, no, 58, so far. I don't want to get a heart attack and then hit the bucket from one day to the next. So my house was paid off. We had two new cars. So I say to my wife, we can do it. She said, if you want to do it, okay. And that's how I worked for the Nico. I worked there for 7 years, and I done my own buying. It took 6 months. Then I negotiate. We had a purchase agent. I know him. He was very good, but he was always had with that job. And so I talked to the chef. Then he bought sushi tuna. We grind it. Paid $15 a pound for the fresh tuna. I say I would buy the tuna from that same, but the tailpiece for $5 a pound. I say you save $100 just on one item with everything else. I say let me get in, and I say I make the quotation. I put a clipboard on. You can see. And whatever I order, I make a copy and put it on your desk so you know what I'm doing. And he agreed with that, and he watched me very closely. Then 3 months before, we needed a bandsaw. And they bought one. The salesman was a slick one. He said it was slightly used. But I looked at it, I said, oh, no, no. So I know Hobart. And I know Atlanta Fixture, where I bought all my stuff from in a restaurant. So that's a good thing when you were already close to 35 years in the city and worked there. You know all the purveyors and the movers and shakers in the business. So I took the screwdriver with, opened up where the motor is in. It was rusted. The restaurant was all brand new. So I took the serial number out. I called Hobart up. I told him who I was. And I asked him, can you give me a run? Oh, we know the machine. We just refurnished it for $600. This was a recess. It's 12 years old. I say, okay, thank you. So I told my controller, don't pay. And the 2,700 they want to sell us for 2,000. I told him I can buy this machine for $1,000. Yeah, what? He said, yes, don't pay it. And after 6 months, they put a pressure on us. If we put you on COD, it was an embarrassment for the hotel. But then I made the phone call to the owner. I told him who I was, and I said, you're a salesman. I don't blame him that he wanted to make a buck, but don't put shit on us. You know, you got it for free and you paid $600. I pay you $1,000 for this machine. It's okay. It works for what we're doing. He said, can I pick up a check today at by 4 o'clock? I said, yes. He just wanted to get the money. So I went to the controller and I said, you can write a check for $1,000. I pick him up today by 4 o'clock. By 3 o'clock, one guy was there, picked him up. And then 2 weeks later, I was called to the GM. I said, it was a Japanese. And first I was worried. Then if you're called in by the big boss, it's usually never good. You think about all the sins you committed in the past 6 months. And I wasn't aware of any, but then you don't know. But he said, did you do that when you got that machine? He got up from his chair and he said, shake your hand and say, thank you very much. I like people like you who works for us, who works for the hotel. So after that, I had a free hand. Mm-hmm. And I took full advantage of it. And so move forward, then we had the Olympics. And that was a challenging time. Then Eastman Kodak had rented the whole hotel, all 400 rooms, 800 people. Every 4 days, I brought in a bunch of them from around the world. And they paid handsomely, and the hotel made handsomely money. But we had a problem. We could have used 10 more chefs, but we didn't know where to put them. And like in our house, we had 10 people from Germany want to go to the Olympics. They stayed with us. They went to the Olympics, went to New Orleans, Okeechobee Swamp, and then back to the Olympics. So we were busy. I worked from 3 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I told my wife, when I come home, I just took a shower, shave, went to bed, and said, keep the house quiet. Then otherwise you have a grouch on your hands. And my wife said, yes, yes. And she kept it nice and quiet. So that for 6 weeks, then they asked us how many hours to work. Well, most people say they work 6 days, but one day off. But I say I work 7 days a week. Those 15 hours, 16 hours a day, doesn't matter. I do it. Then the job needs to get done. And they're paid. It was not overtime. Overtime, a time and a half, it was double time. And you got very healthy that with double time pay. And what we did is after that, we put 700 square feet of tiles in our house. So and we used that money, put it there, and they had two, the Japanese, if you come on time, they give you 9 minutes to be late. 10 minutes, you are late. If you be not late for the whole 3 weeks was the Olympics, the 1 week off, and then was the Paralympics. So the whole 6 weeks, I worked there. I was never a minute late. I was 10 minutes early. They gave you $600 cash. I was one of three people who received it, who never was late. And I bought my nice desk for it. That was my own present to me. Mm. It was for my 60th birthday. I say I deserved it. So that was that. And after the Nikko in 97, they sold it to Hyatt back. Then Hyatt, their Nikko had it built for 40 million. They put another 15 million in. After the 3rd year, they broke even, and then we made money. But they sold it for 90 million. Hyatt bought it. And they made the Grand Hyatt out of it to reach this, their 4 or 5 star hotel group range, the Grand Hyatt. And I left there. They brought a chef in. He was so vain and so independent at work. And all the employees were coming to me and asked for it. The executive was busy, the Swiss guy with management and doing all that one. He said, the little things go to Hans and handle it. And I did it, you know, for 6 years. Oh. But when he came in, he looked at me. He said, why you do that one? I said, that's just the systems the old chefs put in. And then he done some digging. The bottom, he came down back and said, last year, I see your signature on $6 million. You are not qualified to do that one. I said, I beg your pardon. I said, I'm qualified. I was executive chef. I had my own restaurant for nearly 10 years, but I took a step backwards to work here. Then I didn't want any more the responsibility, the headache, and the pressure on me. And put a long way short, he eliminated my position. He couldn't fire me. Mm-hmm. Then I was made employee of the year, had 2 other recommendations, so he couldn't go that way, so he eliminated and went to portion control. The nice thing was, though I worked then for Bucket Beef, I know the owner for many years, and he said to me, Hans, as a chef, you were a pain in the ass, but why don't you start to work for me? I said, okay, and I worked in a butcher shop, showed him how to cut the meat for finer grade, and everything went portion controlled for more and more and more. Mm. That the hotels give up the butcher position and they just order it and put the price $1 more to make it pay for it. And that way I came to Bucket Beef. I worked there 4 years and then Cisco bought it. Mm. And Bucket Beef had a lot of illegals working there. They were Mexican or Guatemalan. They were good butchers. They had worked there 10, 15 years. They cut good meat, some of them. But they were illegals. Mm-hmm. And they fired all the manager except two. And I was one of them. And I was then made the purchase agent. I could buy everything, you know, that. I kept that. My budget was over $10 million. I bought all the Krivac puzzles machines we had. And then I organized it. And that was my forte organization. Mm. And then take a couple of days, sing it out. And even with the chief engineer, that when I told him I want to move all this to, he said, that wouldn't work. And then he came in. It does work. I said, yes, I told you so. But so that is how I came. I worked there for 12 years at the Cisco when I was 72. The economic crisis 2008 hit. And he asked me, what's my future, how I see my future. I say, well, there's an economy. I say, I'm 72. I can retire. Let a poor devil who has to work, work. So he said, okay, usually you can stay 12 months on Cobra. I let you stay 18 months. So you can figure out what you do with insurance. So I stayed there, and they paid for it. So that was even better. And after about 16 months, I looked in Blue Cross Blue Shield, Aetna, United Healthcare, and all the other insurance companies. I talked with them. Man, I was so confused as I ever was. You know what they tell you and what they didn't tell you, you know. So I finally went to a primary doctor we were for the past 10 years. There was an old office manager, and she was between 65 and 70. And I told to the reception, I'd like to talk to your office manager. She looked at me a little bit. What the hell you want? So I said, I'd just like to talk to her. So I said, ma'am, this is my problem. What insurance company you like to see which doesn't give you fit, you can work with, and you have good experience with? And she said, I just put my 92-year-old mother on United Healthcare. Mm. So I took United Healthcare, and I'm still with them. And yes, I could get cheaper ones, but I don't want to do it. Then what? Whenever you switch, you drop something, and it then hurts you. So I just say to hell with it.
Hans, we need to kind of wrap up.
Yeah, no, I'm finished now.
Oh, okay, well, anything you want to share about what you've learned? Or?
Well, one thing is share and share alike. Mm-hmm. That's just why I do volunteer work. After I retired, I made 4 mission trips with our church of Guatemala, and this brought us me back to the Africa, how primitive that Guatemala City is, a modern city. But you go 100 miles out of it, it's not a third world, it's a fourth world country. And the village we were was 350 miles. It took us 2 days with a truck to get there. Then we were building showers, Johns, toilets 1 year. And when we did 5 days work, 5 days sightseeing. I saw the big Mayan city of Chikal, where they've done the digging out since 1910. Pennsylvania University done the digging. The big old Mayan cities, you know, what, 2,000, 3,000 years old, some of them older than the pyramids in Egypt where I was. So, but when I turned 80, I said, no more, then I don't want to make a burden of myself. And I started to volunteer at Benson Center. This is on Roswell Road. It's from Fulton County, senior citizen. I started out with 1 day a week, but before I know, I worked there 5 days a week.
Wow.
3 to 4 hours a day. In the morning from 6 to 8, 9 o'clock. And it was good. You know, I picked up the bread from Whole Foods, Publix, and Kroger's and brought it there, and they give it to the needy and whoever wants it. One end. Sometimes dent cans I couldn't sell. Nothing wrong with that. You know, coffee, you just have to grind them. You get one day out of it used by best, but nothing wrong. You know, just put a little more coffee in it, sweet. It still tastes good. But that's what I did. And that's when we came. We stayed there, but my wife got sick. It was a third big operation. And I realized I might come to the point where I couldn't take care of her. Mm. Bart and my daughter, they want to change the house so we can move in, but it was not big enough. So they looked outside, and they came up to right across the street to the 17 Ferries. They found it on that house on Sunbriar Drive, and we moved in, had a nice in-law suite. I liked it. Had a nice kitchen. And my daughter first said, you don't need the kitchen. You can cook in mine. I said, that's the first argument which we will have.
Yeah.
So, and I said, no. But they found that one, and I liked it. And we moved in. My wife made it just about a year, and then she passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In May, that 27th, it would be her fifth year.
Oh, wow.
And so we, in June the 17th, I moved in here about 6 years. They moved in June 1st of that year, that time. Wow. 2 weeks' time, then by then we sold our house and moved in here. So that's it. And now I'm working then at Northside Hospital twice a week in the 1505 building. There's a doctor's office. People come in, don't know where the doctor is or this or that, you know. They just need children's cardiology. I show them where it is and they give them the numbers and so on. But that's my life's more interesting. Was not boring, but I made it.
Wow, that's so good. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh,
yeah.
You good?
Yeah.
Wow.
Get a little bit standing up to them.
What an amazing story. And the detail that you remember just blows me away.
I done it 2 years ago with this church group. They asked me.
So you shared this then, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm the last charter member of the church and paper member of the Lutheran Church.
Awesome.
And so I had it stirred.
Awesome. Thank you so much. What a great story. And we're going to meet again in 3 months. What is that? 3 months from now?
May.
May, yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Are you an engineer?
Yes.
Okay. So thank you for coming. And again, what an amazing story that Hans gave us. And get to know him better. And please invite your friends. And let's get to know each other better like we have today. So thank you. And get some more food here. We got some more food left. So great. Thank you, Hans.